And then you moved on to, as you say, work for Mark Phillips. And Mark Phillips is a name that I associate with the Apprentice School and him overseeing the Apprentice School. And now you're saying that he had obviously progressed up in his roles with the company to become a director by the time you were working for him.
Yes. I don't think he had a lot to do with the Apprentice School by the time I worked for him. Purely a distant supervisory manner. But no, he was a group personnel director. So he did travel to the other companies, and he spent a lot of time at Worcester. And the work I did for him was probably more varied than for any other of the men at Fieldings. A huge proportion of it was personal. I think when I got onto the director's corridor, it was the first time I saw the special headed paper, which only the directors used. Everybody else, it was the normal Fielding and Platt letter headed. But we had slightly smaller parchment coloured paper with just Atlas Works in beautiful black writing at the top. Not even Fielding and Platt, that wasn't necessary, just Atlas Works. And the directors would use this to fellow directors, more senior people. It's all putting on a good show, isn't it? This is from the director's office.
So it's that. No one's described that paper before, but it was kept more classic. It was just Atlas Works, just yes. two words there at the top of the piece of paper.
Fantastic. I think there was a phone number, but otherwise it was Atlas Works in beautiful script, lovely cream parchment.
And working for Mark Phillips, you said a lot of the nature of the work that you had done for him was personal. So that was correspondence that he would have been sending to other board members, other groups.
Not only other board members, all sorts of people that he knew. One of his big projects in this time was organising the Hunt Ball at the Cheltenham Pitville Pump Rooms, and I remember writing to a number of people connected with the Hunt. Earl Bathurst was one. The Duke of Buccleuch and various other very senior people. Yes, this was a huge project. He helped organise it. And a fellow secretary and I were allowed to go, amazingly, but we were there in the background to sell raffle tickets. But at least we did get to see all the great and the glorious. It was an odd experience for me because my boss was a keen huntsman and I hated it. I was really anti-hunt. But my job was important, so I kept very quiet and just got on with it. I think he knew I disapproved, but, you know, I did what was required.
Can you describe this ball to us? What it was like, where it was, and perhaps when it was, if you remember.
It must have been in perhaps the last but one year of my working there. What would that have been? 66, 67, possibly. It was very grand. Cheltenham Pitville Pump Rooms, which are hugely grand surroundings in themselves. We were still very much in the background selling the tickets, but everybody was very dressed up in beautiful ball gowns, and the men obviously in tails. Yeah, big occasion.
Did any other member of the Fielding staff go, as well as you two secretaries and Mark Phillips?
None that I can remember at all. No, this was very much Mark Phillips's field.
Do you remember the name of the other secretary that you went with?
I do. She's still a good friend, yes. She was Liz Fisher then.
And what did you two say to each other about the experience afterwards?
I think we were slightly nonplussed. Apart from the glamour of it, it was slightly novel to be doing something like this when actually we were just secretaries in an engineering company. So, yes, we enjoyed it. We enjoyed the experience.
So it's correspondence for Mark Phillips. What else? What other work did you do for him? Do you remember?
There was quite a lot of minute taking. This could be intimidating because I often didn't know the people in the meeting at all, and was rarely introduced. So you would have man with glasses, bald man with blue tie, which I would sort of abbreviate in my shorthand, and I could find out afterwards who was speaking. A lot of his correspondence, as I say, was private, which obviously is still private. And otherwise it would have been to fellow company directors in other of the group companies.
And you said that this role for Mark Phillips was a real break for you because it meant that you got to travel away from Gloucester to Worcester as well. What was the nature of your work at Worcester? Was it the same minute-taking, attending meetings with Mark Phillips?
It was exactly the same. There was less minute-taking. It was mainly to be there for his correspondence, to be there for his phone calls, to field all the phone calls he did not want to take and lie through your teeth that he wasn't there. There was much less minute-taking. But it was just lovely to be able to be doing this without having to clock in. Not that I did that after the director's corridor. We did have to do that for Garfield James, but not on the director's corridor. But just to be able to drive through the countryside to Worcester twice a week was great fun, and you never know which day it was. So it was definitely different from being stuck behind a desk all the time. The hours I worked for him were pretty flexible. I don't ever remember working a weekend, but many and many and many a time I would take my typewriter home with me. A great big Hermes, semi-electric. I was very lucky to have the semi bit. All you could do was, the return carriage was electric. Everything else was manual. And I used to have to struggle down the stairs with this to my car. And I would take it home and type his letters in the evening in my own time, just to get things done. And we did not get overtime. I don't ever remember ever getting overtime at Fielding's.
How heavy was that typewriter?
Well, pretty heavy. Especially when you're teetering along in high heels, yes.
And was that kind of accepted, that other senior secretaries would often take personal correspondence home because of the workload? You would just need that extra time to get through it?
Not many did. But if you had to, you would question it. You'd just do it. It was just part of the job, yes.
And you must be one of the few people who remember what the works at Heenan and Froude was like, because you would have gone to work at it. What was it like, the place at Heenan and Froude, the works, the office that you worked in? Can you describe those for us, please?
Yes. Heenan's always seemed much newer and much smarter than Fielding's. But I'm slightly coloured there because, again, I only saw the director's corridor. It still looks pretty similar from the outside. It's near Shrub Hill Station. And strangely, the whole place is divided by a road. And all the offices are on the one side and all the works on the other. Now, I really only remember going once into the works. That really was a no-go area for a young secretary. But that was pretty similar to Fielding's. Just old, huge machinery, dark, men crawling around everywhere on the machinery. But the offices on the other side looked much newer, much smarter, and I believe now they're council buildings. But from the outside, they look just the same.
And how were they decorated? Was it a better state of decoration than those that we described at the start of this interview?
Well, yes, so much better than the sales department, but it was all new and painted. And there was nothing of the beautiful oak panelling that I got on the director's corridor of Fielding and Platt. So I would marginally prefer that. That had far more atmosphere. So Heenan's was newer. There was a funny regard for the people at Heenan and Froude. Fielding and Platt, I think, never quite thought that Heenan people were as good as Fielding and Platt. I think they wrote off actually the entire of Worcester people. Not quite as good as Fielding's. It could be that Heenan's were the first one to do the takeover. I mean, Fielding and Platt was once on their own, and Heenan's took them over. So I think there was always just this little bit of resentment. Then, of course, when the mergers began to happen and redundancies, a number of the Heenan managers were brought over to Fielding's to be managers at Fielding's, and a lot of resentment was caused by that. I remember in particular a works personnel manager was replaced, and there was a lot of bitterness there. They didn't seem any real need for it, and to have a Heenan's man over the Gloucester Fielding's people didn't go down well.
And conversely, how were you accepted as, you know, a Fielding's secretary at Worcester?
I think quite well. Yes, I think I only saw a limited number of people because my main base of friends was Gloucester. So I didn't see that number of people. I just went there to work. But the people I did meet were very nice.
Did you only share an office with Mark Phillips, or did you share an office with other secretaries at Worcester?
No, I had my own office, rather better than Fielding's and newer, and he had his own office. Yes, we all had separate offices at Fielding's. The directors had their separate offices, all with a little hole in the door so that people could see if he was busy or not before they knocked. Nobody ever went into a director's office unless they were a fellow director or equally senior. Nobody ever went in without approaching the secretary first. Is he busy? Can I see him?
And you would have been sitting outside, your office would have been right outside the director's office?
Yes, right next door. A long row of offices, all on the same side. Yes, ours first, then Mr. Phillips, Mr. Rolls, Mr. Fielding's.
And then you would have rung through to Mark Phillips, yes. Or you would have had his diary and you would have been able to say...
On my 4-button phone, I'd ring through and see, was he in or not?
It must have been quite strange to kind of field those inquiries when, you know, he is there, but then he wouldn't be available to see whoever had come to see him. So you would have to be quite diplomatic, I suppose, when the answer came back, no, I'm not in to receive the person.
Yes, it was more difficult when it was somebody within the company, but then you'd use different excuses. He's about to go into a meeting, or he's very busy and can you come back later? The phone calls was much easier, but you did have to lie, and I perfectly well accepted that. My whole job was to make his life easier, to do his work, to protect him from people he didn't want anything to do with. So, yeah, part of the job, you just made it up and lied.
And what was Mark Phillips like to work for? You said that he had that kind of... He obviously moved in high circles, and his background was Eton and the Guards, and that was probably quite different from your experience being brought up in Gloucester, I would imagine.
Yes, not so much. Not so much so as you would think. But yes, I certainly met people and wrote to people that I wouldn't normally write to. You had to remember when you were addressing or talking about him to people or writing to people that he had a different designation for different people. Within the company, he was Mr. Mark Phillips. For a certain set of people, he was Captain Phillips. And for another set of people, he was Major Phillips. I think that was, do they call it his unsubstantiated rank when he left the army? It was Major. So officially he was a captain, but he liked to keep the Major occasionally. When he went up to London, he would stay at the Guards Club. So I would always have to book the room for Major Mark Phillips at the Guards Club. He again was an extremely nice man. He was very charming. He had a very wide circle of friends. He was just that sort of man, very charming.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about your work for Mark Phillips, Captain Phillips, Major Phillips, that we haven't touched on?
There was one occasion when he had to go into hospital for, I think it was a knee operation, and he went to Standish. And I had to go out there to take notes, do his correspondence. And afterwards, I went to his house. Beautiful house out at Winchcombe. And met his wife and young family. He had very young children at that time. While he was in the hospital, Mrs. Jones, bless her, decided to send him his favourite meal. So she found out when I was going to take notes, and I had to go to the canteen and collect a big white cardboard box containing lobster thermidor and take that out to Mark Phillips at Standish.
That's absolutely wonderful, Judy. It's a wonderful story about the life of the company and how thoughtful and considerate you all were, how much of it really was a family atmosphere. You would go and see him in hospital and, you know, work for him there and take out a meal that the canteen manager had prepared for him.
I've remembered another of her star turns too. Not only was Mark Phillips keen on hunting, he was also keen on another of my hates, shooting. He would shoot grouse and pheasant, I suppose. And he'd come in sometimes with this poor bird wrapped up somehow, and I would have to send it to Mrs. Jones, and she would get it dressed for him. And it would usually come back with a comment in her lovely foreign Polish accent, "I've done the best I can, but it was full of shot, so it's the best I could manage."
And she'd prepare it and cook it for him in the Fielding canteen on site. And where would he eat that? Where would he take his grouse?
She'd just prepare it. He would take it home to the wife. The wife wouldn't pluck it and prepare it, but she would prepare it, and he would take it home for cooking. It's just an example of how we all just did things without question. It was nothing to do with selling presses and shears and balers, but for the directors, you would do whatever was asked.
Did you ever see his gun that he used to go shooting with? Did you ever bring that in?
Definitely not. No way, no.
And we talked about the hierarchy of cars before, and we never quite got to Mark Phillips's car. What type of car did Mark Phillips drive, where I presume he kept the gun?
Yes, it was a big Mark 10, a big, I think they called the colour British Racing Green in those days. The Mark 10 that looked like, he used to describe it as the side of a wardrobe. It had wide sides. And yes, he went through had a series of those, replaced one after the other.
So the Jaguar?
Oh, yes, sorry, Jaguar Mark 10. Yes, yes.